accession number 22087, reel 9.
Corporal Weldon, reel 9. I think you were saying that by that time our fighter pilots had really managed to keep the Japanese away.
Yeah.
Stop them from attacking the front line airstrips.
Mm. Yeah, that we'd got air superiority, you know, and then there was I don't think there was any. I was in one air raid, that was all, as far as, two, as far as I can remember. All the time I was out there, there were only two times we were.
Was one of those the one at McTilla?
That was one, yeah.
And where was the other one?
The other one, now then, well, where was the other one? Yeah. Can't think of it now. It was Mettila. Yazagio.
Yazagio.
I think so. Yazagio. At a rough guess, one night we was on the. That's right. Yeah, it would be. It was Yazagio. The guns was all. There was only one gun left, and it was all shielded down and wrapped up, and I'd took the other guns up to the next, to Kalemio, I think. And there was this, I had this heavy, you know, there's some bombs dropped down away from us, about a mile away. And I could hear this aircraft, and I thought, well, it's funny. They don't fly at night, you know. And it was a Japanese airstrip was on. And I thought, oh. And we all run for cover. One bloke run out. Hit a tree and bust his nose. I ran away, but I went towards the dispersal, and I thought, wait, who you fool? He'll know, that's where he'll be making for the aircraft, you see. Anyway, I found a slit trench and fell in it, you know, that was it. It was a good job as well, because he was coming down the road behind from where I'd run from.
He was using that as his.
He was using that road, and he was bombing on that road as well. And the next opposite, about 25 yards from where my vehicle was, where I'd left it, he was dropping anti-personnel bombs in among these Indian Army light attack buffer guns. You know, they never got it. And he was that low, I could see the lights on the instrument panel as he flew over. And I could see the flashes as these switches and that let the bombs drop from the bomb bay. It was as close as that. And, of course, he couldn't do now as regards, because the gun was all tied up, and it might have long gone after, you know, there was no point in bothering with the gun anyway.
Was it just the one aeroplane?
Just the one, yeah.
Do you know what sort of aircraft it was?
No, only at a guess it would be what they used regularly. It was a twin-engined Mitsubishi Army 97. That was what went in my mind, you know, the same as them. It was very similar to a RAF Wellington bomber, that type of aircraft. It was a twin, you know. Her memory has returned, and we've got it, found it at...
What were you doing at Yazagio? Was this?
It was an airstrip, and yeah. We were doing our usual job, but we'd finished, you see, and that airfield was going to be left. We was moving on to the next one, Yazagio, you see.
You were moving up?
Yeah.
Mm. So you're
Kalemio.
From sort of second time you went into Burma, you seem to have been advancing all the while from one forward airfield to another.
Yeah. That was from 1944, we never stopped.
Yes.
That was it, then we went on and on and on and on, kept going.
You said that there was another air attack at McTilla. Was that also at night, or was that a daytime air raid? What happened there?
That one was evening. There'd been a siege there.
Were you there during the siege?
No, but my squadron... flight was there, and I was took bad with malaria and had to go into the field hospital back down the line.
Where was that, the field hospital?
Well, the field hospital would be around about Colemio, I think, around that area. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it would be Colemio, mm-hmm. or Yazagio, I don't know which.
How long were you out of action with that?
Had about 10 days. Yeah. Just long enough for the siege to be sorted out and cleared up, and when I come back.
What treatment did they give you for your malaria?
Now then, I don't know what it was. There was some kind, I don't know whether it was quinine, but we were on mepocrine tablets all the time, and they were suppressing, supposed to though, but it got the better of it. And then I think there was another pill they gave you, mepocrine, and what was the other one? Can't think of the name of the damn thing. And you only used to have half a pill, and you hadn't to do any work while you was taking this pill, and you could only take mepocrine for so many months, and then you had to come off it and go on to this pemmequin for a fortnight, and no work at all while that was being done. And the officers didn't like that at all, because you wasn't doing no work, you know. And I think that was perhaps what there was. I thought I had the first aid post. I went away, parted. I was moving, as I say, moving this stuff up from Yazagio, and I was ill then. I had the army greatcoat on, you know, my army blighty gear was wearing that, and I was still shivering, and I was around a bonfire, and I was still cold. And I went to the medical bloke of ours, and I said, "Hey, I've got malaria, Johnny. Can you shove us in, Doc?" And he put a thermometer in my mouth, and he said, "No," he says, "you can't go in, Doc, yet. It's not low, not high enough. The temperature's not high enough." So I was driving, and look at it then. I had a mate then. There was two of us. They found out that it needed two men because of the uncertainty of the health of one or the other, you see. So my mate, he was, I said, "Well, you'll have to drive." I says, "I can't drive." I said, "I'm horrible, you know." And all day long was going forward, 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 you know, and he gets to this river. And I didn't know what I was doing then. I was getting delirious, and I had my small kit and everything. And then they said, "Oh, well, you go back to that army first aid post." So I goes back to the army first aid post, lost my small kit. I didn't know what I was doing. And I didn't give a monkey. All I wanted was some medicine to get sorted out, you know. And this soldier bloke, whether he was a corporal or what, I don't know. And then he had a stretcher on legs in a two-man tent. "Get on there, mate," he said. "I'll give you some," what he said. And he gave us a drink of whatever it was, I don't know, whether it was quinine or what. But I was out for the count right until next day. And in the morning, when I woke up, I didn't feel so bad. But that's how malaria goes. It goes one day it's really nasty, and the next day it's not so bad, but the next day it's twice as nasty. It's like, that's how it goes. And
backwards and forwards.
And as I say, right, he says, "You're on this, there's an ambulance going back to the field hospital." He says, "You're on board that." He said, "There's some Indians in the back." He said, "There's another bloke with a wounded arm in the front wheel, and a West African driver." Black as your rat he was. And he was calling these Indians, and they were malarial cases, I think. And they were crying like babies, you know. I don't know why, but they were really upset, you know. And we made some char, and had a cup of char, and then we set off. And this West African, it was me, he was calling these Indians black so-and-sos, you know, and it was twice as black as they was. So off we went back to this field hospital.
How did you get on with him? Was he all right?
What,
West African?
He was all right, yes. Mm. You're all right, boss? Yes, boss? Oh, they had a, you know. Well, it was all right. And he gets into this hospital, and it was like a MASH, you know, they've seen on television, MASH, wasn't it?
Yes, Army Surgical Hospital.
That's right, yeah. Yes. And there was duck boards on the floor and all the rest of it, into bed, and what a nice bed and all the rest of it, you know, and a counterpane on and what have you, and little nurses flying around. There was a VAD, I don't know what, voluntary aid workers, is it?
Voluntary aid detachment, yes.
Oh yeah, well, aye, and she was. I took a shine to her, you know. She was a little cracker, and I was in there, my usual, you know, full of it. Eventually, when I started it, I was frightened to start with because I had a pain in my chest, and I knew that if you've got malaria and pneumonia, that was your lot, because they treat one, it upsets the other.
Yes.
And I was really...
You're worried.
I was definitely worried, because I had this awful chest pain, you know. I thought, oh, you'll be all right, sonny, because I'd never looked my age, you know, and I was about 22 or 3 then. Oh, you'll be all right, sonny, don't worry, you know. You've got to have a bed bath. I said, I'm not okay. Anyway, I was holding the clothes around my chest like this here. And there was wounded soldiers and all in this here tented ward, you know, and they were all looking. I think they knew. She didn't call for you. She went from the bottom, and quick as a flash, my pyjamas was off. Everybody laughed, you know, and I said, oh dear. And then she was very good, though.
So you're in there for 10 days, and what happened to you after you'd finished?
I went straight back on duty after I finished.
How did you get back to the...
I got hitched a ride with a wagon somewhere or other.
So you're hitchhiking back down the road.
Back up to the front, you know. Yeah.
And that's how you got to Mactilla?
Up to Mactilla. Gets back into our camp, and then they said, right, get your wagon and load up, we're going to Mactilla. So that was from how long? We'd gone from, Allon, Fremio to Allon, and then Moniwa, and then we left Moniwa for Mactilla. So.
What did you put in the wagon? What did they want taken?
Well, it would be our tentage and guns and what have you. I was loaded up, I had the stores wagon, loaded up with the ammunition and Hispano barrels. Very heavy weight, you know.
Was this one of the Dodge trucks?
The same Dodge that I had all the time. Yeah. And we gets in a big compound, and there was this, I don't know, it was a brigadier, it was some officer, army officer, with a red band on his hat, you know, and he knew then we are just moving now down to Mactilla. And the road isn't quite clear, so have your rifles loaded and one up the spout with the safety catch on, and new boots with the Sten guns, have them loaded and plenty of ammunition, because you just might have to fight your way out, you know. We've got Mactilla, but we haven't cleared the surrounding area. Yeah, all right, so... off we goes then, and they're all pulling out of this compound down the road towards Mactilla. Where are you going? Well then, what are you doing? I'm in the wrong place. So I couldn't show anything else about it. I just followed on, you know, and we'd seen the map, you know. There was only one map, and the CO had the map. And there was a driver's conference before you set off, and you were allowed 5 minutes to look at the map. Any questions? I said, yes, sir, where's the Japanese? Ha, 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 ha. He wouldn't tell me, just that he laughed, the silly old fool. Anyway, off we goes. And I gets into Mactilla. There's a officer comes out, checking hands, you know. First vehicle in after the siege. I says, well, where's the others? He says, oh, you're the only one that's here. There's nobody else. Well, I says, I got a rollicking. I was in the wrong place. I says, they were all in front of me. So that was it, the first one in this after this age. And I pulled up again a slit trench where our lot had been, you know. And this sergeant, he had a bottle of whiskey. I said, "Give us a drink, Sarge." "No," I said, "you miserable sod. He won't give us a drink of whiskey." Anyway, he was kipping out on the tailboard and I was sleeping in the cab. And it went been there that long. I says, "Oh, if out happens," I says, "I'm in this slit trench." Then there was the three buffer shots, buff, 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 you know. I said, "Hey, up, the old Japo, is it?" And it was his last raid. And me and him, I grabbed this whiskey and down this trench. And was there, and he was very nervous. Was this? He was an RAF store sergeant. He was very nervous bloke. And there was a bit of a explosion or two. I don't know what had happened. I never saw no. Anyway, there was all these stones and stuff come rattling in, you know. And what it was a little dog. And he'd been there when all the fighting was on. And he knew where to go when there was any trouble.
Got into the slit trench.
And he come in the slit trench. This little terrier it was.
How did you actually found your way to the airfield then? Had you got directions?
No, I'd memorised it from the map.
Oh, from the map.
And also the majority of traffic. Mm. And I found out later on, these other lot, you know, the brains, they took a wrong turning. Instead of carrying, as they should have done, they turned off somewhere and they went to army. Artillery stopped them. They said, "Where are you going?" I said, "So," and I said, "Well, we haven't captured it yet. It's no use, you lot coming up here. Better get back."
So you got into Mactilla.
I got in there.
Found your squadron. Then the Japanese put in this IRA. You didn't see anything. Did you see any of the Japanese aircraft or?
No.
You had your head that down was, in the slit trench.
That's right. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Did they do any damage on that raid?
And it was more of a nuisance, I think. It upset the apple cart, put everybody on thorns, you know.
Mm.
And I mean, then when I walked round the next day, there was Jap soldiers, gnats swinging, hanging from the guns, and hung themselves. They'd committed harikari, and all, they were laid all over the place. They were tight up to the front then, you know.
Mm. What condition was Mactilla in?
Oh, it was a wreck.
Mm.
And later on, we moved up for a rest near the pagoda and the lake. There was a lake, two lakes, and we camped around the side of this lake. We were swimming in this lake and having a whale of a time till the dead bodies started to float up, and then they said, "Oh, you hadn't better go in there." So that was the end of the swimming caper, you know. Then we moved on again after that.
What, you advanced further?
Well, we went down further on to the next, you know.
Mm. Where was that, remember?
What, the next place from...
Mactilla.
Mactilla, Tongu.
Tongu? Mm. What was going on there?
It was another airstrip, one of these here ex-Japanese ones, you know. Mm. And it was a fighter strip. Mm. And then there was working out from there with the Spitfires and Hurricanes.
What were you doing? Were you still mainly driving?
Yeah, mainly driving and whatever you had to do, you know. Sometimes you'd be on sanitary work, going round emptying dustbins and that sort of thing, you know.
Who decided on what you were going to do day to day? Would it be by the flight?
A flight sergeant.
Flight sergeant. He'd
tell you what to do, or a corporal would come up and say, you know. Yeah. It was... He was always busy.
Mm.
But I had to take the sanitary gang round, and there was Avildar, that was a sergeant, Indian sergeant, and two sepoys or three sepoys emptying dustbins. And they were leading me right dance, these three airbits, you know, and I thought, this isn't no good, isn't this, you know. So they doubt I didn't understand, you know, so... I give them a right rollicking in their head as much as I could do, and told them that the sooner they got the job done, the sooner they could get back and on the chopper, you know. And it struck home, and they worked better, and the job was done, and they were hanging about doing nothing, and they're keeping me tied up all day long, you know, for naught. Anyway, someone sorted him out, and they were all right. The Indian, he needed leading, you know. You've got to exert your authority. That's what you got to do, isn't it? And I was fair. I wouldn't do anything to, you know, be nasty. Some men are used to being nasty to them, you know. But I didn't like that. I treated them as human beings, and I found out that as long as you exerted your authority, they'd look up to you, you know, and you was all right.
What about the locals, the Burmese population?
Oh, the Burmese population. Yeah, we saw a lot of them, because one of the duties was to take the lorry and go to a village and pick a lorry load of young ladies up. And they were, their job was runway repairs, and they'd be cracking stones all day long, you know, and making big stones into little ones and all that sort of jazz. And you could always tell, and at that time it was getting, the monsoons was beginning to break, you know, it was getting a bit nasty with the wet. And you could always tell who was the duty driver. The duty driver, his tent was be full of flowers, jasmines, and these young lasses used to, they were, you know, bring you flowers and all the rest of it.
Sounds like you were on good terms with them.
Oh yeah, after the Japanese, I mean, it was I suppose it was a pleasure for them, you know.
What about the Japanese? Did you see any live Japanese around at that time? Any prisoners of war?
No.
Just the dead ones?
Only loads of dead ones, thousands of them.
What condition were they in? I mean, when you looked at them, what sort of physical condition were the dead Japanese in?
Well, they're so rotted, you know. There was the stench was terrible.
Mm. Well, I mean, did they look as though they were well fed and fit?
Well, yeah, they
apart from being dead, that is.
They didn't look a mess, really, you know. But they didn't like to surrender nowhere, you know. They'd turn around themselves, but you know, see them blokes hanging from gun barrels, you know, the big artillery guns.
Yes.
You know. And rope round his neck and round the gun barrel, you know, and he's swinging in the breeze. That was before the Grave Control Commission. They come and sorted
war graves.
Yeah, because there was our lads. They all had to be dug up and buried properly, you know. Because they just used to dig a little hole and wrap them in a blanket and bury them and stick a pole up, and then they come and dig them all up and bury them properly in the North Hemisphere.
Now, you've been driving this Dodge for some time by then, the Dodge truck. Was it a good and reliable vehicle?
Very so, very much so, yeah. Providing you didn't get any foreign bodies in your fuel. I had a bit of trouble one time with but that was soon sorted out. I happened to be near an army Remy place, and I saw the bloke in charge. I said, I've got problems. Can you help us? He says, well, what's up? I says, something wrong with it, you know, come and have a listen. Oh, he said, I'll send one of my men across, and he sent this army bloke across and stripped the carburetor down and cleaned it all out, and away we went, lovely, you know. There was none of that business about Brill Cream Boys and army. We were all as one out there, you know. It was all one helped the other, yeah.
Did you, besides driving the truck, did you have to do the routine maintenance on it as well?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that had to be done, you know.
What were the main points of that?
Well, you had to check your gearbox levels and back axle level, brake fluid, and engine oil changes, you know, change the oil when it was wanted changing. Air filters, that was another thing it was very particular with it. Because of the dust, you had to keep your air filters clean, you know.
What about big servicing, deep servicing, where would, did you do that, or did it go back to workshops for that?
Well, there was no deep servicing unless it was a breakdown, and then the Remy would have to sort it out, you know.
Did you have any serious breakdowns?
No, I never did. Some of my mates did. When Ginger, I left, he had a wooden model of an Army 97, and he had it on the... It was a V8 4x4 he had. No, it was a Chevrolet 4x4. And there's a bar across the front of the radiator, and that was where we hung the chuggles. Now, a chuggle is a canvas water bag, and you fill it with water, and the fan draws the air past the bag, and that water's cold, and you have a nice cold drink. And he'd stuck this model aircraft on this bar, and he got too near the block in front, and he poked it through his radiator. That was him out. He couldn't go anymore, could he? So to unload everything, leave it. They left him with his vehicle, because nobody was allowed to stop longer than half an hour when he was on the road.
You had to keep moving on.
You had to keep moving on, even the fitters and that. I can't do. You'll have to look after yourself. We'll see you sometime, you know. Well, sometimes he was written off as missing, you know. It was like that was the situation. Anyway, he was there, and then I think it would be maybe a week later on, he caught up with us. I said, "How do you do then? Where are you going?" I said, "What about that radiator?" "Oh," he said, "I pinched one off army wagon." He pinched the radiator off army wagon.
Got away with it.
I got away with it. Oh, Ginger Pinner, we're some rum lads, I'll tell you.
You said that you had to be careful with the air filters because of the amount of dust on the roads. Was there anything else that was particularly hazardous driving through Burma, you know, that was caused trouble with the trucks?
No, I don't think so. You have to watch it. They used to get stuck in sand or sliding about, you know, if it got a bit wet. It could be rather nasty, especially mine, because I hadn't got track grip tyres.
You got sand tyres.
Had sand tyres, yeah. Mm. And I used to manage all right, because I always used to have a four-wheel drive in front of me. And if things got dodgy, I had a tow rope, and I used to drop my tow rope on his hook. And between us, he'd make your way through the mud, and then I'd follow in his wheel marks, and we did it that way, you know.
Was your truck still in desert colours then?
No, they'd spread it black.
They sprayed the truck black when you got the desert tyres on it.
Yeah. And then we eventually had to have, you know, the American Star?
Yes.
We had to have one on each door and one on the roof.
Yeah.
That was for our aircraft.
Recognition.
So as he didn't strap us, you know, because he was tight up to the front, you see. Mm. Oh, yeah.
did you manage to get those tyres replaced eventually?
Eventually, they busted, didn't they? Mm. When he got onto the main roads and we started doing some rapid driving, they used to eat up and burst, you know, because it was going along, and the same sergeant, you know, the poor old sergeant, same heavy load, going down this road, bang, all the gutters, he said. You could see machine gun flashes and that there on the left, and, you know, I says, "No, they haven't," and I pulled up near a culvert. I says, if he's out, "I'm off in that culvert." Well, I had to change the wheel. Well, it was a hell of a job. It was them old-fashioned screw jack, you know, and then there was the wheel to get down, and he wasn't worth a light, wasn't this sergeant, as regards strength. I got the wheel nuts off and got it jacked up eventually and changed the wheel, and the tyre that I'd put on for spare wasn't quite hard enough. It wanted some more winding. Well, I had a little one of these here
hand pumps,
and I was pumping away, and then this jeep come down the road. There was an army officer and a couple of soldiers in it. He says, "What's up with you?" I says, "Oh, I've had a..."